Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sis Internet Radio. Sisters in Spirit, affectionately called Sis, is a nurturing environment for women that inspires harmony in everyday living, shares resources that empower, offers information and support that nourishes the soul, balances our mental and physical well-being, and promotes inner peace and heightened spirituality. Our vision is a world where women live consciously, harmoniously, and spiritually to positively impact our lives and the lives of those with whom we come into contact. Join us as we live life with style, grace, and of course, much joy.
Welcome to our Sisters in Spirit broadcast for Thursday, June 3rd, 2010. You are here with your host, Raisa, and I'm Sky. Hi, Raisa. How are you this evening?
I'm very well, Sky. How are you?
I'm doing well. I am just extremely blessed and happy to be here. And our topic this evening is Grow Your Own Green Garden, an introduction to organic gardening. Joining us this evening as our special guest is Derek Thomas, who is founder of Thomas Landscapes, a full-service landscape design and maintenance firm that serves the Washington, D.C., Virginia, and Maryland metro areas. Derek is a certified professional horticulturist and master gardener who also serves as a regular landscaping consultant for WTTG Fox 5 Morning News here in Washington, D.C., and he has appeared on several home improvement shows that are broadcast on the Home and Garden Network. Derek is a regular contributor to the Hill Rag and the D.C. North news publications here in Washington. Derek is a member of the Maryland Nursery and Landscape Association and a member of the Association of Professional Landscape Designers. Ladies and gentlemen, our favorite listeners, we are so happy to introduce to you Derek Thomas. Hi, Derek. How are you this evening?
Great. How are you guys doing?
We're just wonderful. We're just so happy to have you here to share with us this evening about how to get our organic gardens going. And so would you start us off, Derek, with the basics, like what is organic gardening and why is it important?
Okay. Organic gardening, first of all, and thank you for having me on the show. This is an honor, and I'm just thrilled to be here this evening. Organic gardening, it's rooted, if you will, pardon the pun, in people not using harsh chemicals and anything that's not natural to grow your crops. And, you know, not so long ago, before things got really mass-produced and just, you know, when people had small gardens that were manageable, everyone had organic gardens. And as we got busier and lives got busier and we turned over the care of our gardens to mass producers, it was a lot easier for them to use chemicals to control pests and disease and things like that that plants will naturally have. And so when you get back to organics, you're going to have to be more of a gardener. You're going to have to be more active in your garden. You're going to have to take a stewardship to your garden and be out there every day, you know, whether it's getting ladybugs and setting them free so that they eat the aphids, or using some of the natural sprays that are all plant-based oils to control any of the insects. You know, you're going to have to do a little bit of extra work, but in the long run, it's worth it because you're getting a fruit or a vegetable that you know is not chemically treated. So that's what organic gardening is about. It's about getting back to the basics of using something from nature to create more good things in nature. And the other part of the question was about getting started. You know, if you've got a little plot of land or a balcony garden or an acre, if you're that adventurous, you know, the big thing in getting started is making sure that you start off with healthy soil. And as we talk this hour, I'll continue to stress the importance of soil health. Soil is alive. It's loaded with nutrients and bacteria and different things like that. And you have to make sure that you start out with healthy soil. And, you know, you can, there's a lot of agencies out there that will do pH testing and things like that to make sure that your soil is healthy and that it doesn't have any heavy metals or anything like that in it. And once you have that, you know, you're well on your way to creating, whether it's an apple tree that you want to plant or a row of tomatoes, you're well on your way once you have the healthy soil.
So healthy soil is the foundation towards getting your organic garden growing. And so how do you tell if the soil is healthy? You did mention something about testing. How do you know?
Well, if you wanted to contact one of the extension agencies in your area, now most of the extension agencies are still out of the local community college, or you can contact your local Department of Agriculture if you did want to test the soil. If you are pretty sure that the soil is safe in your area, what you want to do to build up the soil health, you have to remember that soil has several components. Soil has non-organic components, which are things like sand and silt and rocks and any of the things that are not organic, things that are not going to break down. And then soil has organic material. The organic material is stuff like decaying leaves, compost, any of the additives that you can add to build up the soil. And what you want to do as an organic gardener, you want to continue to build up the soil because the sand and the permanent structure of the soil is pretty much there. Even the clay is really good. In many of our areas, clay gets a bad rap, but it's loaded with minerals. What you want to make sure is that you're building up the organics. So you're adding compost on a regular basis. You can do things like if you have a lot of deciduous trees that shed their leaves every year in your area, your soil probably tends to be a little bit on the acidic side, so the pH is a little bit low. You can add a pelleted lime, which is a limestone that will over time slowly sweeten the soil, because you want to try to achieve a pH of about 6.5 to 7, ideally, and most of your vegetables and fruit will grow in a 6.5 to 7 pH. But it's about adding compost. You know, a lot of people get out there and they do their own composting. You don't have to do that. Today, because of organic gardening's popularity, people are producing, you know, the compost. You can go out and you can buy it. I've even seen at some of the coffee stores, they're giving coffee grinds, which is a great way if you have a very sweet soil. It's a great way to add some acidity to your soil. You can put coffee grinds in there. You can also, you know, if you're so inclined, start a compost bin. But it's all about adding the organic content because that's what the plants are going to feed on. You know, the sand and the silt kind of hold the plants in place, and then the organic stuff continues to add the nutrients that the plants need. And that way you won't have to go out and buy synthetic fertilizers.
Okay, so depending upon my crop, let's say, if I'm doing watermelon versus, I guess, a squash, would that be a different type of soil that I'd be going for, or fruits versus vegetables?
That's a great question. Most of your plants that are going to produce something that you eat are going to need a high content of readily available nitrogen, potassium, and potash. And that's the three numbers that you'll see in commercially available fertilizers. And it's also listed as N, P, and K. What you want to make sure is that you're adding those additives. Now, a watermelon versus a squash, they both happen to be very closely related. And they also happen to need partners. Most of the time people fail with watermelons and squash and things like that because they plant one or two plants. and they depend on cross-pollination. So if you know that, you're well on your way. If you build up the soil, there's really not such a thing as adding too much organics, because you remember, it's going to decompose, it's going to naturally dissipate. But what you don't want to do is, if you're using anything that's not organic, you don't want to overdo it. With the organics, you're going to leach out. There's going to be a leaching process, and you really can't overdo it. I tend to pour it on when it comes to the compost, and my tomatoes are usually about a pound each.
Oh,
so you can, you know, yeah, you can create some really monstrous, like when you see the fairs during the fall season, you see all of the local fairs come up, and the people have the, you know, the 300-pound pumpkin. It's because they've really, if they've done it organically, they've really added on the manures, you know, and the plant has had all of the nutrients that it could handle.
So you said add regularly. You can't add too much. What's adding regular compost? Is that every 2 weeks, every month, three times a year? What is that?
What you want to do is, starting off, if you're going to be starting your garden now, it's June, so you want to make sure that you're starting with some mature plants. Build up the soil. So mix in about one part compost to one part natural soil. And then you can add something, since you're starting out in June, you can add something that's going to help to retain moisture, like a peat moss. Peat moss naturally retains moisture. Or a leaf mold. Leaf mold naturally helps retain moisture. Then you can go every 2 weeks, if you like, during the entire growing season, and do top dressings. Try not, when you do a top dressing, you're putting about 2 to 3 inches of an organic compost as a top dressing onto your soil. One of the things that I like to do to help keep the compost in place, I'll then take newspaper. If you can find out from your local newspaper printer if they're using soy-based inks, that's what you really want to try to use. I'll take newspaper and I'll tear it in shreds and I'll place that on top of my compost, because that adds a carbon component, which helps the compost break down a lot quicker. And I'll water that entire area down. And it also has the side benefit of helping to keep the weeds down.
Okay, great.
You mentioned that we're now, you know, in the beginning of June, Derek. And are there any particular plants that we can continue, that we can start planting now, that would yield for the summer?
Oh, absolutely. All of your hot season vegetables, now you don't want to do seeds. You want to start with some plants.
Okay.
And because most of the seedlings that you're seeing now as plants that are ready to go in the garden were started probably around mid to late February.
Oh.
But if you can find the vegetable plants, your squash, your cucumbers, you can do bean seeds. As a matter of fact, I just put in some bean seeds last week, because beans tend to be pretty quick growing. But your tomatoes, any of your hot season vegetables and herbs, so basil, parsley, tarragon, you know, any of those herbs that you love to use for cooking, there's thyme, there's oregano, all of those things can be put in now. And if it's a plant like an herb, what I like to do, as long as the garden center or the farmer's market has the plants available, I'll continue to buy them in succession. So I started planting my tomatoes, for instance, around the second week in May. And then last week I put in some of the final tomato plants. What that's going to give me, it's going to give me an extended harvest for my tomatoes. So with your basil and your oregano and things like that, you can be putting it in straight through the summer.
Okay. Yeah, I've
heard
of doing that with flowers, so that you like might more consistently have gladiolas or tulips or whatever, they appear to last longer because you're planting.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a good trick with the flowers too, and the gladioli are one that that a lot of people have gotten into the habit of doing that, and it extends the season. And it's the same thing with your veggies. You know, if you ever wonder how come we have tomatoes in the month of February, it's because there's farmers in Florida who have planted them 3 months before. You know, so anytime that you can do it in succession planting, and depending on where you are, you know, check with your local extension agent. And like I say, you can find out your extension agent through the Department of Agriculture. But there's many areas, and many of the listeners may live in an area that's temperate enough that they can actually be planting tomatoes in succession so that you have tomatoes that you're harvesting in November, December. I happen to be in Washington, D.C., so, you know, in November we're pretty much done. But, you know, that's more cool season vegetables at that point. But as long as you're building your soil, you can have stuff going in for the whole month of June for your hot season vegetables.
Okay, we're going to let our listeners know that we are here with our special guest, Derek Thomas, president and founder of Thomas Landscapes here in the Washington, D.C. area. And we're talking about growing your own green garden. This is an introduction to organic gardening. And we'd like to let our listeners know, anyone that might be on the computer and want to call in, the call-in number is 347-838-9886. And we'll be opening the lines in a few minutes, so please get your number and dial 347-838-9886 to ask a question or to make a comment. Once you dial in, press the number 1 so that your hand will go up and we can acknowledge you and bring you onto the line. We will call the last 4 digits of your phone number when we start to bring callers onto the line with us. So, Derek, you talked about, you gave us an introduction as to what green gardening is or organic gardening is, and we've talked about some of the plantings that we could still do now that it's June. One of the questions that we started discussing a little earlier before the conversation with our listeners started was container plants and planting in small spaces. How can, you know, those of us that have space limitations get into organic gardening?
Well, actually, if you have space limitations, so say, for instance, you have a patio or you happen to live in an apartment and you just have like a shared space in the back that happens to be paved, you actually have a thumb up on a lot of us if you're willing to do the commitment of the watering, because you can control 100% the content of your container. So when you go to create your container, you can absolutely add a completely organic mix. Now, there's some that are out there that are pre-mixed. You want to usually stay away when you're doing a container garden. You want to usually stay away from anything that says soil on the label. The reason being is if it's a potting soil or, you know, a soil mix, soils tend to be a lot heavier. And you don't want a really heavy mixture in a vegetable garden container, because what that's going to do is it's going to condense. It's going to compact the roots. The roots aren't going to be able to get enough air, and you're going to have smaller or non-existent fruit and vegetables. So you can start. Sorry?
I was just going to ask if there is a product that you would recommend for gardening.
Yeah, there's a lot of commercially available garden potting mix. There's a Miracle-Gro product that happens to be one that I tend to like for some of the container tomatoes that I grow, because it's complete. It has the sphagnum moss, it has the perlite, it even has a little bit of the starter fertilizer. So you get the plants going. And it has what's considered a silicate gel. The silicate gel is a component that it's crystals. And when water hits, it expands 10 times its size by retaining moisture. Once the soil around it gets dry, the crystals release their moisture, therefore rehydrating the soil. So any of the commercially available mixes now, if you wanted to be adventurous and you wanted to do it on your own, one of my favorite mixes is to start off with one part sphagnum peat moss, one part play sand. The reason that you use play sand is created for using on playgrounds, and it's always sterilized. So you know that you're starting with a sterile sand.
Okay.
You can get vermiculite or perlite. Either one of those are fine. They help to retain moisture in your soil, and it also helps to lighten up the soil and add air to your soil. And then you want to use whatever you end up with that mixture. So say we end up with a pound of mixture or a half of a cubic yard of that mixture. You want to put just as much. So say we've ended up with a pound of our sphagnum moss, our sand, and our perlite. Then you want to add a pound of organic compost. And you can get that commercially from most of the garden centers today. They have an organic compost. Sometimes it's called OraGrow. Sometimes it's called Bumper Crop. So you mix in 50% organic compost and 50% of your soil mixture. And then that you put into the container. And you're going to have, I mean, you will have vegetables that will be the rave of the neighborhood. And you'll also water a little bit less because you've added the perlite or the vermiculite.
Any type of container that works especially well?
If you're using containers like clay pots or any of the highly decorative clay pots that have the glaze on them, just keep in mind that those tend to evaporate the moisture quicker. If you use a plastic container, make sure that the plastic containers, there's a lot of decorative containers out there on the market that do not have drainage holes. You have to have drainage holes. One of the quickest ways to kill your plants is if you water them, there's no way for the water to escape, and then the soil goes sour. Because
I learned that, and a lot of plants don't like wet feet, or they don't like their roots to be stay wet consistently. I've killed a few.
So have I, because I didn't check to see, because sometimes the other thing is, sometimes with the plastic containers, which I think the plastic containers, even though, you know, see if you can get one that at least has been recycled, or if you're going to use it, make sure that it's one of the plastic containers that, you know, has like a 5-year to 10-year shelf life, so that you know that you're going to be using it for some time.
Right.
And the other way, if you don't mind it, if you're not a stickler about appearances, you can go to some of the nurseries and landscape companies in your area and ask them if they have some of the grower pots, which are like the black pots that you see plants being grown in, because sometimes they have 5 or 10 gallon sizes, which are pretty nice size planters for getting a vegetable garden started. And as a matter of fact, my parents, they have these 20-gallon grower pots that I gave them because they have a really bad problem with rabbits. However, the rabbits don't climb. And so they can have their tomatoes and their lettuce and all of their veggies in these big pots. And they've had them set out there for probably a good 10 years now.
Wow.
So, the plastic containers, even though you are buying plastic, it does last a lot longer, and it helps to retain the moisture a lot better. But make sure that they have a drainage hole.
Okay. And I think we can, we have a couple of callers that are interested in coming into the conversation. So what we're going to do is call the last 4 digits of your phone number, and you will be on the air. Okay. Caller number 536, welcome to the line.
Oh, good evening. This is Zita calling from Macon, Georgia. How are you all? Thanks for having me on and for doing this program for us. My question was,
we're hearing some back noise. Any back?
I'm sorry. I'm actually in a meeting. I'm sorry about that. Let me try to move. My question was, how do you get falls out of your garden? We have a little small community garden here, and one of the problems we have is falls. And, you know, we don't want to put anything down to hurt them, but how can we get rid of them safely?
We're going to mute you while he can.
No, it's okay. The thing about frogs, if you have frogs, you have standing water somewhere. Well, first of all, making sure that it's a frog and not a toad. But both frogs and toads begin their lives in the water. So you have standing water somewhere. If you can find the source of the standing water and introduce, what I hear you saying is you want to cut down the problem on the frogs. You have to introduce, and you're in Georgia, so you're temperate enough, introduce a type of fish, but make sure that the fish is not a fish that's going to be an invasive species. So find out. Once again, you can check with Fish and Wildlife, perhaps, or the Extension Agency. Find out if there's a minnow or some kind of a fish that you can introduce into the creek or the pond or whatever it is that's close to you that's going to help to eat the tadpoles. And if you have less tadpoles, you end up with less frogs. The only other way that you can get rid of them is if you were to use a product that was designed, say, to get rid of slugs or other pests like that. Unfortunately, if you were to do that, you would end up ending the life of the frog. But the safer, humane way is to find out where the standing water is and introduce fish to that body of water that are going to eat the tadpoles. And it's a situation that you'll be addressing for next year, because by now most of the tadpoles have hatched out and you've already got them.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, that's
wonderful.
Exactly what's happening. Thousands of them, it seems like.
And if it's a nuisance problem like that, and there's thousands of them, what you may want to consider doing is having someone, a specialist from your branch of Fish and Wildlife, come and take a look at it, and they can address some humane ways of controlling the population.
Okay, good. I'll let everybody know that. Thank you very much for that, Derek. Really appreciate that.
Thank you so much.
And I'm enjoying listening to you, so I'll definitely stay on the line here.
Thank you.
Thank you for your question, Zita. Derek, one of the questions that I had, and I don't know if this is just a rave for this year or if this product has been out for a while, is the topsy-turvy kind of container. And I see a lot of people using that, and just was just wondering if you are familiar with that and, you know, your perception of that. Does that really yield the kind of tomatoes and products that they advertise?
I wish I had invented it, because I'd be sitting somewhere else having this discussion with you.
On the island somewhere.
On my own island, right? Let's see. The product has its limitations. I think that I'm just a plant purist, I guess. I just think it's wrong to put a tomato upside down and have it struggle to go right side up through its entire life. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but for convenience sake, I guess it works for a lot of people. I have had some colleagues that have used it. I don't think that the yield is as bountiful, but I myself have not personally used it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that if you were going to do a container garden or if you were going to do the topsy-turvy, it's a personal preference.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer to do the container garden the old-fashioned way. One of the ways that the topsy-turvy does work exceptionally well, because this particular tomato tends to be an overproducer anyway, is if you're going to do any of the cherry tomatoes or the little plum tomatoes, you tend to get a lot anyway. So you would still get a good harvest. But I just think it's a little bit strange to see an upside down tomato. I almost feel like rescuing them.
Well, is that upside down tomato a natural thing, or is it just the way that it grows? So I guess I'm alluding to the difference between something that's been genetically modified versus an heirloom plant. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, you can. The topsy turvy. You can put any tomato plant in it.
Right.
Basically, what it is, it's a vessel that has a cutout at the bottom. You have to put the plant in, and then you have to fill it with the bag, if you will, with soil. So then the plant is upside down. Genetically modified plants, and we could, you know, that could be an entire show. Genetically modified plants are where biologists have actually gone in and altered the genes. So, for instance, tomatoes have a gene that make them susceptible to black spot at the bottom. If the climate is too humid at a very certain time during their maturity. And what biologists will do is they will go in and they will alter genetically or erase that gene so that their genetically altered tomatoes no longer get black spot. And that's why a lot of purists have a big problem with it. Or they'll splice, you know, an animal DNA into a plant DNA, and it'll cause the plant to act differently. Heirloom plants are old-fashioned plants that tend to be a little bit, they're a little bit further removed from a lot of the hybrids. Most of the tomatoes and peppers and vegetables that we grow are vegetables that have been hybridized. So they'll take a green zebra tomato and they'll take another tomato and they'll cross it. And out of all the young tomato seeds that germinate, the one that grows the strongest, they'll see what it produces, and then they'll continue to do that. So it's almost like what people have done for years with dogs. So we end up with, say, the Whopper tomato, or we end up with the beefsteak tomato, because we have hybridized them out. Heirlooms tend to be going back to the roots, and that's why a lot of people like them, because the taste tends to be a little bit simpler. You have, you know, like the green zebra tomato, which tends to be a very fruity, sweet taste. And then, you know, there's one called Nebraska Wedding that tends to be extremely sweet. It's almost too sweet for a tomato. But, you know, when you go back to the heirlooms, you're actually going back to the natural plant.
Oh, and that sounds wonderful. I purchased an heirloom tomato plant about 2 weeks ago from the farmer's market. And I think they had the name Hillbilly on it, so I don't know what that meant, but I did see the picture of the tomato, and I recall that I've had it before, so I wanted to try to grow it.
Well, I got, you know, I was adventurous this February, or bored, one or the other, and I did some black tomato seeds, because in the grocery store during the month of January, they're chocolate is what they're called.
Okay.
And there were chocolate tomatoes, and they were good.
Oh.
You know, at a time when no tomatoes are good in the grocery stores here in the Washington area, these were good. So I got the seeds, and the plants are now about a foot tall. So we'll see how they do. But it was a really nice, sweet tomato. So you'll have to let me know how Hillbilly is.
Okay, I will. It's a tomato that has a lot of the yellow in it.
Oh, yeah. I love yellow tomatoes.
Yeah. We have another caller. I'm going to call the last four digits of your phone number to bring you into the discussion. Welcome, caller number 7312. You're on the line with us here with Raisa Sky and Derek Thomas. 7312?
We can go to caller 1175.
Okay. Caller 1175, you're on the line.
Yes, my name is Carolyn Jones, and I'm calling from Shelby, North Carolina.
Hi,
and
welcome.
Thank you. And I'm so glad. I have a million and one questions, but I'll just limit it. I just started for the first time this year a raised bed garden, and I used all compost. Is it okay? And that's one of the questions, and I had tomatoes, and I had just visited Raisa not too long ago, and I saw her tomatoes. Would you believe I have one little tomato up here, and I'm so excited because this is the first thing that has come up. Yes. So is there anything else? Now, when I did the compost, I also, because in the city of Shelby, what they do is all the trees and all the leaves, they have their own compost here that you can go and you can get the compost totally free. And I went there, black, totally black, and someone told me it was just gorgeous. And I did that, and I also added some lime to it. I used all seedlings because I didn't begin doing this until about the first week in April. No, the last week in April, the first week in May. And now they're starting to grow, but I have these bugs, and I have birds in my yards, and I have squirrels, and they like my plants. What do I do? And is there anything else that I need to add to the soil?
The first question about the soil. It's great that you use compost. It's great that you use lime. The one thing that you want to make sure, and whether you're using a newspaper or a shredded hardwood mulch, you want to make sure that you add something as a top dressing to help retain the moisture. The other thing that you want to make sure...
I did put the newspaper down first. I lined it with the newspaper before I put the compost on top.
Perfect. And then, you know, make sure that you're putting something to help with moisture retention. You can even do more newspaper. Just try to make sure that you that your newspaper company is using a soy-based ink. That way you are staying truly organic. And then the other thing is you want to make sure you can take take an old fork. I like to take an old fork. And if the soil around the plant is very, very compacted, just take a fork and work like by sticking holes into the earth, you're going to introduce a little bit more air into the soil, because the first year that the soil tends to be a little bit heavy when you're using pure compost. As far as the pest are concerned, there are a lot of organic products out there that are natural and that act as deterrents. With the internet at hand, you can basically just Google, you know, organic pest control, and there'll be numerous companies that will come up. One of the ones that I like what they are producing, because it's all natural oils. It's things like peppermint oil or canola oil or lavender oil. They even have a mosquito repellent. They have an ant repellent. They have a bunch of different repellents that are all natural. It's a company called I Must Garden. And if you Google, just check them out, I Must Garden. You can order directly from them, and it's the products are wonderful. They work. And birds are the only way to keep the birds away is to put up bird netting.
Yeah. Because I have tomatoes, I have strawberries, I have broccoli, and I mean they're looking nice, they're doing well, but I just wanted to make sure my okra isn't doing that well. My watermelon and my cantaloupe is doing, but if I can just keep the bugs down. Now, I did spray it with I did a mixture of the lavender and the lavender castile soap, and I sprayed it with that, and it seemed to be doing well. However, with my strawberries, every time they turn red, here we go with the squirrels, they eat them.
Yeah, the squirrels are going to, either the squirrels or the birds, they will eat your strawberries. So what I grow mine actually in pots, because then that way I can move them around. And what I tend to do is I tend to put in a couple of stakes around the pots and cover the entire thing with bird netting. And the birds and the squirrels stay off, and I get to have my strawberries.
Okay. That was one of my concerns as well in terms of the tomatoes. Will the squirrel, do they like tomatoes too?
The squirrels don't like the tomatoes because they're acidic. But last year I had this, I don't know if they were a rogue family of birds or just a visiting family of birds, And they decided that all the green tomatoes, when they got to be about 3 inches in circumference, they wanted to put holes in them. And so my tomato patch last year ended up becoming this entirely netted patch that the birds couldn't get in, and I got to have my tomatoes. So, you know, people who have grown figs for years will tell you, they have to net the entire tree because the squirrels and the birds will eat them before they can get a chance to harvest.
Oh, okay.
So if you have the pest, the bird netting works very, very efficiently, and it's not really expensive.
Okay, and you can get that from the garden store, the home and garden store?
Oh, yes, you can get that from any home and garden store, and it's just bird netting. It's a black netting that's about an inch square, and it's very, very lightweight. And if you just put 4 stakes that are taller than the plants that you're protecting, you can basically just toss it over it, and it keeps the animals out.
Okay. I heard you mention several oils, lavender. I've been using neem oil. Is there any oil that's more effective than another as a pesticide?
Well, and it's interesting that you would bring up all of the oils, particularly neem oil. Keeping in mind, you have to decide where your organic stick falls, because there are people who think that if you introduce an external oil, that you are putting a chemical. And in fact, any time that you alter by spraying anything on a plant, you are introducing a chemical per se. But they're natural. So when you go to organic gardening, I am not going to sit out there and pluck, you know, potato beetles off of my potato plants. So I'm going to spray them. The oil that I love, that's the broad spectrum, takes care of all of the insect pest oil, is it's perinthium, which is a chrysanthemum oil.
Okay.
And chrysanthemum oil tends to be one of the best. Insects have not been able to, devise immunities to it, because sometimes the neem oil, it's been overused,
mm-hmm.
So it may work for some, but it may not work for all. The other thing that works really good, and you did mention using the Castile soap, Safer makes an organic soap. The company's name is Safer, and it's a organic soap that's an insecticide. There are people that will say because you're putting lye on the garden that you're no longer organic, but you have to make sure that with anything that you're putting on, even if you're putting on peppermint oil to smother the aphids, you have to make sure that you're putting it on as prescribed and that you're doing it intelligently.
Okay, thank you very much. And we'd like to thank our callers and remind the callers that if you do not have a question, please take your hand off of the number one so that we'll know that you are not trying to ask a question. And, Derek, we'd like to ask you to take a moment to tell us a little more about your company and about any upcoming events, or just let us know what's going on with you and your company.
Well, right now we are, you know, our motto is redefining beauty one client at a time. And it's the month of June, and in the Washington metropolitan area, we're busy helping folks get their slice of pie back to being beautiful. And that's what we tend to do. It's something that I'm blessed to be able to get up every day and play in other people's gardens, and that's what we're doing. As far as upcoming events, we don't have anything scheduled right at the moment, but we do, I do the weekly segment, as you mentioned at the opening, on the local Fox station here in Washington, WTTG. And then we've got a garden, home and garden tour that's coming up, but that's not until the month of August that we'll be taking part in.
Oh, okay. That Fox 5 segment is wonderful, and I've learned so much by looking at you on that segment. So thank you for doing that, and thank you for the information that you share with us.
Oh, thank you. And, you know, the listeners can, even if you're not in Washington, you can go to myfoxdc.com and then just click on mornings, and you can also take a look at the segments.
Okay. And what's your web address as well? Do you have that on your web as
the
well?
The web address is Thomas Landscapes. It's www.thomaslandscapes.com. Landscapes is plural, .com.
Okay.
And also I wanted to, in closing this evening, I did want to share, I know that you asked what one of my favorite quotes were, and I would love to have the opportunity to share that with the listeners.
Okay. We're going to take a couple more calls before we do that, and then we will.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, we'll definitely do that. Well, one thing that we like to do during our broadcast is to check our blog and see if we have any questions there. So I'm going to look at our blog, and I think we do have a question from one of our blog writers. She says, I've seen some gardening soil that has the word organic in the name of the product. How can we tell if it's really organic?
And you have to trust.
I found that earlier because you told us not to really use soil, right?
Yeah, well, you can use soil if you're putting it into the earth. If you're putting it into a container, I would stay away from the soil because there's an organic garden soil that Miracle-Gro has come up with, and they're actually getting ahead of the game, if you will, with organic gardening. But as far as how do you make sure that something is organic? I would say that you'd have to contact the company and ask them who they are certified through. Or you just have to trust that in this day and age, if a company is going to take the time to put organic on the label, because there's a lot of pretty strict controls. So if they're going to put organic on the label for a soil packaging, that you can trust that it probably is. But if you're in doubt or if it's a company that you're not familiar with, you can absolutely, usually there is a way to research the company, find out, or give the company a call and say, you know, who certifies your soil facility.
Okay. All right. Thank you. We'll take another caller now. Caller 5386, did you have another question?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I thought I was cut off. No, I don't. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you. 1175, you're on the line.
Oh, we spoke already, and I asked him. I was the one from Shelby, North Carolina.
Okay.
And I thank you.
We'll remind you all to take your hand off of the number one so that we'll know that you don't have a question because everybody's hand is up right now. Okay, so we will invite you to visit Derek's webpage at www.thomaslandscapesplural.com. And he has a wealth of information there, video clips, articles, just general information about gardening in general and organic gardening, so please visit his website. And we just want to thank you again, Derek, for being with us. Raisa, did you have any closing comments or any?
Yes. I'd like to invite the listeners to also visit our webpage at www.fluidmagazine.com/blog. You can access the blog there and comment, ask questions, suggest topics, and just give us some feedback on the things that you'd like to hear more of and what you did like in the programming that you've heard so far.
One of the things I would like to invite our listeners to do, too, and I had planned to do this because I'm just so happy that I have my tomato plants growing. And since Derek said that we can still plant cucumbers, I'm going to look for cucumber plants. I have seeds, but I think it's a bit late for the seeds. So I'm inviting everybody to said to email us a photo of your finished products, of your veggies and flowers, and let us know how your garden, your organic gardens, fared this season. So remember to do that, and we will mention it throughout the rest of the summer. So, you know, be sure to take pictures and send us photos of your prized garden fruits and vegetables and flowers.
We're also going to be doing a part two on organic gardening early in July, so we can get an update on how it's going, and you can get some more tips from Barry, the gardener, who specializes in talking about self-sufficiency, so using gardening as a means to be self-sufficient, and you can do that in July.
And I also would like to let everybody know that coming up on June 13th, and we have a show called Sunday Brunch and Networking Event, and we will be hosting a live Sunday Brunch and Networking Event in our Washington, D.C. circle and in our Atlanta circle, so please be sure to join us. If you're located in Washington or Atlanta, feel free to come by. We sent out information, so just contact us and let us know that you'd like to come by. And if not, definitely dial in, because we're going to have a networking expert to give us some tips on upping our game in terms of networking and promoting our businesses. So we're excited about that, and that's going to happen on June 13th. And June 24th, we will have the Love Doctor in the house. So we will be talking about relationships. Marriage, couples, and relationships.
So, and single people as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So with that, I think we are ready to start talking about our quotes. And Derek, would you like to start off?
Absolutely. I to give you just a little bit of background on how I came across this quote, I was taking the time in the late 90s to put some of my mother's gardens back together that I had created, and I found this carved stone, and the quote is, it's anonymous, there was no author, or it wasn't contributed to anyone, but basically, this is what I'd like to leave the listeners with this evening, because it's always something that I go back to. An hour spent in the garden puts life's problems into perspective.
And you say that because it gives you time to think and reflect?
Well, and I think more so it's because, you know, you get in there, and I don't garden with gloves, and you get in there and you get your hands dirty, and, you know, you're connected to the earth.
Yeah.
And whatever was happening before you take that hour to get there and dig in the dirt, it just really is not that big of a problem.
Yeah, that's very profound, really, and, you know, speaks to one of the major benefits of organic gardening and gardening in just in general, because, you know, there are the benefits of helping the environment, you know, eating fruits and vegetables that don't have pesticides and other chemicals in them, and also reconnecting with nature. Like you said, getting your hands dirty, being out there with Mother Earth and just reconnecting. And that kind of centers you, and one of our favorite words brings about a sense of peace and harmony. So that's a major benefit of gardening.
And also,
absolutely,
you know, the energy that you get, or even the taste and flavor that you get from eating something fresh out of your garden is so much
better
than something that you buy from the store.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing?
Yes. And the sense of accomplishment, too. I mean, we could just think of all types of benefits from, you know, gardening and organic gardening. It's just, you know, beneficial all the way around, from the environment to personal health and well-being, and psychologically as well. So we encourage everyone to do that, and we encourage everyone to let us know how your garden fared throughout this season. Raisa, did you want to share a quote?
Yes, I did. I was reading Don't Worry, Make Money Again, and I saw something applicable to gardening as well, and he's just saying don't be afraid to take baby steps. Many people are so frightened to take baby steps that they end up doing nothing. So don't be afraid to get out there and start your organic garden. You can do it.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
And start in a pot. Start in a pot, but start it.
Well, that's where mine are. They're in pots. And I too was hesitant about it because my thing was I did not want to have to come home and fight with these squirrels because they were eating my plants or, you know, destroying my tomatoes and other plants. So I was like, I'm not going to do it this year. I'm not going to do it. But I just really wanted to garden this year. I mean, put out veggies. And so I went and I got the plants. So we'll see what happens. But I'm definitely going to get the bird netting because I think I'm going to need it in this area. And I, too, had a quote that I'd like to share, and it says, garden making, like gardening itself, concerns the relationship of the human being to his natural surroundings. And that is by Russell Page. And I'd also like to share this quote that I've been sharing for the last couple of shows because I think it speaks to what Sisters in Spirit is about. And that reads, I offer you peace, I offer you love, I offer you friendship, I see your beauty, I hear your need, I feel your feelings. My wisdom flows from the highest source. I salute that source in you. Let us work together for unity and love. And that's from Mahatma Gandhi. And with that, we'd like to thank everyone for tuning in and listening to us this evening, and we give a special thank you to our special guest, Derek Thomas of Thomas Landscaping and Design. Thank
you, Derek. Can you give us that website one more time?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. It's www.thomaslandscapes.com. And thank you so much for having me.
You are so welcome, and thank you for sharing your knowledge and expertise with us. And we do hope that you will be with us again in the future to
absolutely
help continue to help guide us with our green thumbs.
Not
and
a problem.
Brown that'll turn green.
Yeah, or good one.
Well, like you said, baby steps.
Yeah.
Just don't be afraid. Just do it.
Okay. Thank you for listening. You've been listening to Sisters in Spirit. And with that, we will say good evening. And we encourage you to infuse harmony into your everyday living. Good night, Derek. Good night, Raisa.
Good night.
Thanks for listening. Good night.